This is Holiday Readings and Remembrances, reflections on the season as told by members of the Northern Michigan University and surrounding communities. In this edition, we'll hear Lillian Heldreth of Marquette recalling a childhood Christmas in the Southeast.
A Goshen Christmas Memory. This is a story for my grandchildren and for those who would like to remember a world before text messaging, video games, or even television. It happened more than 60 years ago in a place you've never seen. It was a time that never quite was, because I am probably putting together events from more than one Christmas. But all of them really did happen. It was a few nights before Christmas, and Daddy, Mama, and I were at the apartment we rented in Morgantown, West Virginia. We were getting ready for the Christmas program at Goshen Baptist Church. Daddy was pastor, and Mama often played the piano for services. All three of us had parts in the program. I wanted to be an angel and wear white wings and a sparkly tinsel halo, but no such luck. I had to read the Christmas story from the Bible while others acted out the parts and said the lines from a script. But because my birthday was December 12th, I did get to wear my pretty green velvet birthday dress, and Mama let me wear my hair down over my shoulders instead of skinned back in braids. It almost made up for the brown, laced-up Girl Scout shoes I had to wear because the doctor said so. Mama was putting on her finest black suit, bought during the war, when skirts were quite short. Skirts got longer, but we didn't have much money, so Mama cut long slits in the skirt and inserted kick pleats of black and white plaid. She lengthened the skirt with the same plaid and bound the jacket with it, too. Mama's made-over outfit looked prettier to me than it had before she fixed it. While she struggled to get her lapel pin placed perfectly, Daddy was carefully gluing fake hair to his face, using something he called spirit gum. It smelled funny. He really wanted to grow a beard for playing the part of Joseph, but Mama said no, so he did the next best thing. Daddy looked really weird. His thinning hair was still blonde, but the stuff he glued on for a beard was gray. I should have grown my own beard, Daddy said, as the straggly fake one caught in his overcoat. Now, Lon, Mama warned. Daddy was silent. We got in our car. We drove down our hill onto College Avenue. I tried hard to see into the corner beer joint. I'd heard that it had something magical, a television. But the beer joint, now we say bar, had lots of brightly lit advertising signs. I couldn't tell if I were seeing a television or not. Doggone it! But I was happy soon, because Daddy chose to take the longer way down High Street, with its decorated store windows and Christmas lights, rather than the normal route. And then we were on the road along the Monongahela River. Across the dark river shone bright lights from the Matheson Chemical Plant. It stunk worse than a skunk, and its fumes made paint peel right off nearby houses. We climbed up and away from the smelly factory onto a higher plateau above Morgantown. I wanted to see some snow, but we wouldn't get much of that all year. We drove past lighted houses, warm and inviting. The night was cold. It seemed like a long time before we turned off on Little Goshen Road. We passed the Bigelow's house, cruised up and down a couple of low hills, and parked on the church lawn. The old church was the shape of a shoebox with a simple gabled roof. Its elderly bricks were made before America's Civil War. It had no steeple. I really hoped I didn't have to go to the bathroom during the program because the little outhouse out back was cold and dark and scary. We walked on winter's brown grass to the church door. Just as we arrived, Mr. McBee flung it open. "Merry Christmas, Sandy Claus," the old man almost shouted. He called us kids Sandy Claus at Christmas. Merry Christmas, I replied politely. How are you, Mr. McBee? Oh, I'm tolable peart, he exclaimed, beaming. I'd asked him how he was, just to hear him say what he always said. Daddy had told me it meant tolerably pert, or just okay, but the way Mr. McBee said the words, they seemed to mean wonderful. Mr. McBee was skinny and bald, always dressed in a dark suit with a vest and a pocket watch. He took Mama's coat, saying cheerily, "Well, it looks like another green Christmas. You know what they say, a green Christmas makes a full graveyard." "Oh, I do hope not," said my mother. Daddy had told me about that saying. He said that everyone seemed to get sicker when winters were warm and rainy, with no snow. Elderly people often died then, if they were going to. "But why does Mr. McBee seem so happy about it?" I had asked. "Oh, he's as healthy as a horse," Daddy said. "He knows he'll be here to lead the singing at their funerals." The little church was filling up fast with chattering people. Everyone knew everyone else. There were no strangers at Goshen. I stopped by one of the two genuine Burnside stoves. They were fat, round, iron stoves, almost as tall as I was, and they burned coal. Before people arrived, Mr. McBee fired them up until their sides glowed red. I was careful of my new dress, because those stoves really could burn your sides. But if you sat near a stove and things got boring, you could amuse yourself by popping the big bubbles heat had made in the brown paint on the pews. Then you could see how many layers of brown, tan, or green paint you could flake off during one sermon. At least tonight I wouldn't have to sit for the whole hour. I would be standing most of the time, and there would be no sermon. When I felt warm enough, I went up to the front row where I could watch people get ready. Store-bought costumes were not an option in a farm community. The little kids, as angels, did get white robes made of bedsheets and trimmed in tinsel. But everyone else got bathrobes for oriental dress and curtains or scarves for headgear. I wished we could afford something better. But Daddy, an artist at heart, did his best. He tied cord around the headscarves the men were wearing, getting them to look almost Middle Eastern. He had a little trouble with Louis Biglow, who was my age and a very jumpy shepherd, and with Louis's father, who was Daddy's age and horribly nervous, even though, as the third wise man, portly Mr. Biglow had only one line to say. Part of the problem was finding a bathrobe big enough to fit around him. The manger was someone's handmade cradle, with a little real hay for authenticity. Goshen's farmers had plenty of hay. Baby Jesus was a large doll that didn't look much like a baby to me, but for some reason, a real baby wouldn't do. Three generations of the Snyder family came in, and the younger McBee family. Old Mr. Snyder was a very tall man, older than Mr. McBee, and he was frail. I could bet that he was glad it was Christmas, and Mr. McBee couldn't choose the song called "If Your Heart Keeps Right." Mr. McBee seemed to pick that one every time Mr. Snyder had another spell of heart trouble. Daddy never did figure out whether Mr. McBee did that on purpose or not. I carefully climbed up on a step behind the piano so I could see to read my script by the piano light. When Mama stopped playing, most of the church lights were out. The younger Mr. Snyder was working all the lights we had. Our spotlight was Daddy's slide projector. I took a deep breath in the dark silence. Although young, I was a good reader. Since Daddy was the only man willing to glue on a beard and be Joseph, he couldn't be reader. Most of the adults really didn't want to read in public. That left me, too little to be scared. And besides, I knew it almost by heart. And there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And Joseph went up also unto Bethlehem with Mary, his espoused wife, she being great with child, I read. Daddy walked into sight from behind a curtain, supporting Ruth, one of the younger women. I wished Mama could have been Mary, but she was playing, away in a manger, while I read about no room at the inn, and how Mary brought forth her firstborn son and laid him in a manger. And that doll still looked stiff as a board to me. But then we all sang, Away in a manger, no crib for a bed. And I felt better. We had no adult choir, so everyone had the singing parts. Next came the shepherds, abiding in the fields. All the boys were shepherds, and the little girls in those tinsel choir robes were the angels, while we all sang, Hark the herald angels sing. I saw Louis Biglow yank on little Sanford McBee's bathrobe, and little Sant got him a good one on the arm, before Joseph muttered, Settle down, in a preacher tone that even the back row heard. I wanted to giggle, but I kept my voice steady on, With angelic hosts proclaim. Somebody had to hit the high notes, and it looked like a lot of the grown-ups were, well, kind of shaking and covering their mouths with their hands. I got a break during three manger carols. I could just sing, which was easy. But I knew the tough part was coming. The wise men had to speak, and none of them wanted to. Big, strong men all, they felt absolutely silly in their wives' headscarves with tinsel tied around in place of crowns. Even Daddy was nervous because they'd had an awful time in rehearsal. And they offered unto him gifts, I read, gold and frankincense and myrrh. I had no idea what the last two actually were, but they must have been expensive. While the wise men paced very slowly into the makeshift spotlight, we sang, We three kings of Orient are, a song that didn't sound very good for myrrh, sealed in the stone-cold tomb. Then Emil Kincaid stepped forward as first wise man and surprised us. He was a quiet man who spoke little, but his lines came out low and clear. Mr. McBee the Younger also did well as second wise man. I remember only the line written for third wise man. As he placed his gift of myrrh, Mr. Biglow was to say, I feel humility. And Mr. Biglow did step forward bravely on cue and managed to kneel without tipping over. He spoke out, too, loud and strong. I feel humiliated, he said, and stepped confidently back into his place. Now what, I thought, everyone is going to laugh. Poor Mr. Biglow. Mama struck the piano a resounding chord. I was supposed to have a couple more lines, but I caught on. Mama was saving the day. Joy to the world, I sang as loud as I could. It was the next song. Mr. McBee jumped to his feet, leading the congregation as all the actors gathered around the manger. By the time heaven and nature and the audience had finished with, Repeat the sounding joy, repeat the sounding joy, no one was tempted to giggle. As people were hurrying to get rid of their costumes, I heard Daddy tell Mr. Biglow how well he had done. Mr. Kincaid joined in. No one would ever refer to that mistake in Frank Biglow's presence. Then, from behind the curtain, came a ho, 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 Merry Christmas! Out came Mr. McBee in a Santa Claus suit just his size, the skinniest and merriest Santy, as he said, ever. By the tree at the back of the auditorium were boxes of hard candy and old-fashioned chocolate drops and oranges. Everyone got one box of candy and one orange. And somehow, because oranges and Christmas trees smell wonderful, and singing of joy brings joy, and Mr. McBee was a right jolly old elf, and nobody laughed at the humiliation of Mr. Biglow, it really was Christmas, even with shepherds in bathrobes and no snow.
Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a Public Radio 90 production produced at the WNMU-FM studios in the Learning Resources Center on the campus of Northern Michigan University. I'm your producer and host, Stan Wright. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.